Hi there. I'm Paul Boger, host of KNPR State of Nevada. Enjoy this conversation from the show. If you like it, please follow us, and thanks.
For years, Prim and its trio of casino resorts was an enticing stop for travelers crossing the state line into Nevada. The unincorporated town 45 minutes southwest of Las Vegas drew truckers, deal-seeking tourists, and Californians looking for a slightly closer casino. And for Southern Nevada locals, it was a pilgrimage to catch a concert, shop at the local outlet mall, and test their mettle on a 209-foot-tall roller coaster. But in the late 2000s, fewer travelers hopped off I-15 for the stop. And fast forward to a couple of months ago, Affinity Gaming announced that it would close all three casinos. And thus far, it's been treated like a death sentence for Prim. So how did Prim rise to prominence, and under what circumstances could it be saved? To first answer that question, we turn now to Michael Green, a history professor and chair at UNLV, who teaches and writes about Nevada history. Professor Green, Michael, welcome back.
Great to be back. Thanks.
Take us back 100 years. Who is Pete McIntyre?
Pete McIntyre ran a service station at what was then called State Line, later renamed Prim. And he was an old bootlegger. He'd been in trouble in California for it, gotten some trouble here for it. He also had the habit of shooting at people. He wound up in the local courts a few times, apparently on one occasion because somebody came to the station, got water, and didn't buy any gas. Well, he eventually wound up with what they called miner's consumption, lung issues, as an old miner. And he died in California in 1933, and they buried him in the area that is now Prim. And supposedly, he wanted to be buried standing up, holding a bottle, which seemed a very appropriate way for an old moonshiner to go out.
Feels very old-time Nevada. Now, Las Vegas began as a railroad town. Reno did. Sparks did the same way. Did Prim have that distinction as well?
Prim is not a railroad town. It is a highway town. Really, Pete started out there with his service station because Highway 91 from Las Vegas to Los Angeles, or vice versa, had a long drive, a two-lane dusty road. You might need gas. You're going to need water. So there was a market right there. And that's what got him going there. And of course, if you wanted a little moonshine during Prohibition, he'd take care of that too.
All right, fast forward to the 50s, and it's the first time we see the name Prim pop up. Ernest Prim buys 400 acres at State Line. Why and what does he do with that land?
Well, Ernie Prim came down from Reno. He had had a place there called the Prima Donna, and he was a bit of a, I guess I'll say, a maverick. He pushed Reno to change its laws limiting where you could have gambling. They didn't want gambling beyond a certain point. He built his Prima Donna across the street from where they wanted it. But he's looking at doing something similar down there, get a little casino and resort going, whatever you want to call it. And it was a business opportunity for him, and well, why not?
So when does the Prim family really begin to transform the area into a small destination?
I think you start seeing it in the 70s and 80s, mainly with Gary, Ernie Prim's son. And then into the 90s, they've got the three hotel casinos built, and it was Gary Prim's operation. And eventually, he ends up merging with MGM in the late 90s, where he's involved in building the New York on the Strip, and MGM, in turn, has his properties in tandem with him. So really, I'd say the 90s is when you really see Prim blossom.
Prim added Buffalo Bills in 1994, as you were saying, complete with an arena for concerts, an arcade for kids, and amusement park rides. Was it trying to compete with the Strip, or was it trying to complement it in some ways?
I would say both in this way. It's a complement to the Strip because you cannot match the Strip. I mean, they are not going to have that long line of hotel casinos there. They're also complementing the Strip at that point, if you think about what your reference to the amusement rides and so on and so forth, with the fact that Las Vegas was marketing itself in the mid-90s as a family destination. And I'm pretty sure Prim's thinking was these families are coming up from Southern California, give something for the kids to do as well. Then in turn, I think that there's a bit of competition because I guess I'd say if I am driving up from LA and I just really want to gamble, I really want to get in there, but I also don't want something as big as the Strip, as bright as the Strip, something a little calmer, Prim would be my answer. Plus, you can get entertainment there depending on the time and place because of the arena. So there's an element of competition, but it's more along the lines of, I think, complementing the Strip.
That was UNLV History Department Professor and Chair Michael Green talking to us about the rise of Prim Nevada. The city is all but set to shut down after the final operating casino, Prim Valley Resort, closes on July 4th. To give us a look at how we got to this point, we turn now to gaming reporter David McKee, who has a column on Las Vegas Advisor's website and serves as the editor for Casino Life. David, welcome back.
Thank you.
You began covering gaming in the late 2000s. At the time, what did you make of Prim and its status as a roadside destination?
Well, it was always kind of a neither fish nor fowl destination. I think Dr. Green has set it up very well. It was a nice alternative to the Strip if you were coming from California, a change of pace if you were a Las Vegan, but it got caught between a couple of factors. One was the increasing popularity of Las Vegas, and the other was the rise of tribal casinos in California. And the last 25 years, they've ground inexorably away at Prim's customer base.
Affinity Gaming buys the properties from MGM in 2007. Was there anything about the transition from MGM ownership to that of Affinity that started the long downturn?
Actually, with Herbst, the Herbst family bought it from MGM and they grossly overpaid for the properties. Affinity was born out of Herbst Gaming's demise. And what happened then could be described as a death spiral business model where they gradually kept subtracting amenities and the product was allowed to get beaten up. And there was just less and less and less of a reason to go to Prim. Until at the end, there was just one hotel casino left, no outlet mall to speak of, really no draw.
I think we think about the pandemic's effect on Nevada's economy quite a bit lately, but the Great Recession was incredibly impactful on the state. So I'm curious, what did the Great Recession in 2008, 2009 do to affect Prim?
Well, that was the point where the waste matter hit the fan for Herbst Gaming and Affinity swooped in. It didn't have a catalytic effect on Prim. It was more of a gradual erosion, I think. And then the last nail, to mix my metaphors, the last nail in the coffin was pounded last November when Hard Rock Tejon opened near Bakersfield. The temporary casino is a big hit. There's a presumably better permanent casino on the way, and that really knocked the last of the props out from under Prim.
I remember Prim being talked about as if it was going to be the next Laughlin, the next Stateline, Northern Nevada, West Wendover, Mesquite, pick your town. Why do you think that never came to fruition, Dr. Green?
I don't think that it had its own, I don't know, I'll call it cachet. In that way, that it was so dependent on travelers coming up or down the interstate. Laughlin, there's a little population nearby, and it's on the Colorado River, state line, up the Tahoe area. There are other things. Prim is just sort of sitting out there. And yes, they added the golf course. And mind you, I think most Las Vegans were most familiar with Prim, if not for driving. To and fro, the lottery store, but there wasn't enough there to make it the equivalent of a state line or a Laughlin. Although it used to be called state line. We had two state lines in Nevada, and I'm sure the Postal Service just loved that.
I'm sure it made everything easy. David.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was just going to add to that that since there are no casinos in Utah, Wendover will always have a place in people's hearts. Prim, not so much.
In that same vein, I'm curious what the impact of online gaming has done to these smaller gaming towns.
I don't think it has a big effect. I think the causes are the ones that Dr. Green has set up very well and which we've been discussing. I don't think people. If they're looking for convenience gambling on the internet, they're probably not going to go even to Bakersfield.
You know, the Prim family says it's speaking with a number of possible partners to take over the properties affected, including companies with gaming experience. Is there a gaming company that can save and revive this relatively remote but accessible casino town?
No. The handwriting has been on the wall for a long time. And the company that's trying to do it, LV Petroleum, has a business model proposed that I think is delusional. This is a company that has no experience in gaming, and they propose to run everything, including the casino. And the one casino they're proposing to resurrect first is the dustiest, most dilapidated, most disreputable of the three, Whiskey Pete's. So it's a business model that is all but doomed to failure.
Professor Green, Nevada has a long history of boom and bust towns. In some ways, is this just the latest new developing ghost town?
You know, I would end up deferring to David, who knows so much more about gaming than I do, but I cannot think of another gaming ghost town in Nevada. You always think of the mining ghost towns. And this is not a mining ghost town, notwithstanding Whiskey Pete's origins, and that there have been some mining in the vicinity. And this is not necessarily, I think, a new iteration for the reason that you're not going to see places like Wendover and Laughlin dry up and disappear any more than you'll see Las Vegas do that. So this could be a unique one, but it is certainly different for there to be a gaming ghost town.
David, we have about 30 seconds left. You mentioned tribal gaming a moment ago. What impact has that had just overall on the draw to Nevada and to these smaller gaming towns?
I think it's mostly chipped away at the ones on the California and Arizona borders, particularly California, and to some extent on Reno. Las Vegas, it has not made a measurable dent.
We've been talking to David McKee, gaming reporter for the Las Vegas Advisor and editor of Casino Life. Also with us is Michael Green, chair of the history department at UNLV. We've been talking about the history and economic realities of Prim, which could all but shut down in July when its last operating casino resort closes. Now I want to turn to Holly Vaughn, the owner of Battle Born Pins, a Nevada-centric apparel and accessory company. I spoke to her earlier this week about her take on Prim. Here's that conversation. Holly, thanks for speaking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Your company, Battleborn Pins, focuses on merchandise celebrating various landmarks and cultural institutions around Southern Nevada. Why do that?
You know, growing up in Las Vegas, I was really surprised by how nostalgic I felt for all of these old signs and casinos that were gone, and how I just like didn't have any way of representing those things from my hometown that I could wear and with pride, you know. So I just started making them, and so many people responded positively to it because they also, you know, they would have like a parent or grandparent who had worked somewhere like the Stardust for 10 years, and then it would close and they had nothing to show for it, nothing to remember it by. So a lot of people gravitate towards my merchandise because it is all, sometimes it's all that's left, even though it's not original, it's all that's left from these places.
You do a lot of social engagement through your Battleborn Pins Instagram account. And last week you posted from Prim. What spurred that visit?
I'm definitely planning on making some kind of pin or magnet to commemorate Buffalo Bills and Prim and what it means to people. So I wanted to go and visit and take some photographs and document it and just kind of see what the vibe was there, see if people were talking about it closing, see if other people were out there photographing it, and just get to see it one last time, because you know how it goes with, as soon as these places close, a lot of times the demolition is the next step. So I just wanted to be able to see it and appreciate and document it as much as possible before that time came.
I'm guessing there wasn't much to do there since most of Prim, I guess, is already closed down. So what did you do during your visit?
Yeah, so Buffalo Bills is closed and it does have signs out, no trespassing. So I was able to take a few photos, and then I went and toured and looked around the area where the employees live, the apartments, kind of to see what that looked like. It's actually a very quaint community that seems very heartbreaking that it could potentially be gone. And then I was able to look at the Prim Resort. I was able to walk around, take a lot of photos, and talk to people. Everybody, you could kind of hear conversation going on in the casino of people saying, lamenting that it was going to be gone, and people were kind of in shock and just couldn't believe that this was happening. And that was pretty much the majority of what I was able to do over there.
Being from Vegas, everybody seems to have at least some connection to Prim. What was yours?
Just the same as most people, you know, driving past on the way to California on vacation, getting to view that incredible Buffalo Bill sign and the neon on it, going out shopping when the mall was still open and robust. And it just felt like a place that was always going to be there.
How about the outlet mall? I mean, it felt like, as teenagers, that was the place to go.
It really was. I think that, you know, before the fall of the Great American Mall, that was a great stop, and it became this pilgrimage that you could do from Vegas, like, oh, let's go get a great deal, you know, let's go out to the mall and let's have an it kind of felt like an adventure, you know, because it wasn't too far away, but just far enough to where it felt like well, yeah, like a little adventure.
Many of your pins are based on Vegas icons. If you had a Prim pin, which landmark or object do you think you'd be depicted?
I really focus on monumental neon signs are like a niche interest of mine. And so I can't help but be drawn to the design of the Buffalo Bills. I mean, the amount of neon, it's absolutely incredible to look at. If you have a chance to go and stand underneath it and just look up at this, I consider it to be a monumental sculpture more than a sign. And so I'm really attracted to that personally, but also Whiskey Pete's has such a good logo that's like really iconic as well. So that's tempting. And I know a lot of people have a lot of fond memories of the Prim Resort as well. So maybe I'll do a little trio or something like that to round it out.
Where do you think Prim stands in Southern Nevada's overall culture?
Oh, what a great question. I think that it feels like a place that a lot of people are nostalgic for it, that kind of like in the same way that a lot of people are nostalgic for the 90s in general, and how that seems like this golden era. And so Prim feels like this place that you feel like is always going to be there, and it's like a part of your childhood or like life of growing up and going in between these two states. And so I'm hoping that it will someone will save it. It just feels like this place that we should maybe try to protect and help, you know, if any way possible. Yeah, it just feel it feels like it feels like it should be there, you know. We deserve to get to keep some things, right?
Holly Vaughn is the owner of Battleborn Pins. Holly, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is a delight.